I'm Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today's story is taken from a website by Arthur Kachatrian, entitled Misconceptions of Intelligent Design. He begins, I recently came across a blog post written by an atheist that begins by claiming that nobody knows what intelligent design, or ID, is, and that people who hold to ID are intentionally changing the terminology in order to confuse the masses. First, I must point out that this is patently false. Arthur, intelligent design is the theory that our universe is best explained by the creative activity of an all-powerful God. This belief is held by billions of people all over the world. Arthur continues, while I'm a bit confounded why there is so much confusion in the public about ID, I suppose I should not be. Arthur, I'm not confounded. Intelligent design is a desperate attempt by ghost worshippers to counter the provable results of science. He continues, the more accurate view of ID would be that life and universe are better explained as the result of a mind rather than mindless process, because they bear the qualities usually associated with a mind, namely complex specified information that from our uniform repeated experience only come from minds, not blind processes. Arthur, before there were minds, complex specified information existed in many forms. We have the fossils to prove it. Attributing this information to blind processes demonstrates a failure on your part to understand that the basic laws of science are anything but blind. Arthur continues, secondly, ID does not merely pertain to the origin of life, but permeates many other areas of biology, many areas of chemistry, and into physics and cosmology. Arthur, swap out the words pertain to and permeates for the word infects, and I'll sign. ID infects the origin of life, and it infects many other areas of biology, chemistry, physics, and cosmology. He wrote, the modern ID movement is merely the direct scientific application to the concepts. Arthur, intelligent design is the direct rejection of scientific conclusions to the concepts. Now Arthur continues, let's take a look at some of the other specific claims mentioned in the piece. Number one, ID is against the scientific theory of evolution because evolution doesn't explain abiogenesis. Arthur replies, to put it mildly, the writer has a horridly inaccurate view of ID. First, ID is not necessarily against evolution with respect to the totality of what is meant by evolution. ID is a scientific model for helping to explain the natural world. No, Arthur, it is not. There isn't an ounce of science in intelligent design. It is a religious model of the world and nothing more. He continues, in one sense it competes with evolution, but in another sense it also works in conjunction with evolution. That evolutionary processes are at work in biological systems is not really a question of debate. Small evolutionary changes within kinds have been directly observed. Arthur, that's what forced you guys to invent the terms microevolution and macroevolution. He wrote, there is usually enough built-in genetic variability in organisms to allow for a fairly wide adaptive range. ID is typically employed when large amounts of complex specified biological information is required to go from one completely different organism or subset of an organism to another of a completely different nature. Arthur, where your argument fails spectacularly is in your failure to recognize that all life on Earth is related, and that there are no organisms of a completely different nature. I know how much it bothers you that you are related to monkeys, but the truth is much worse than that. You are also related to a banana. In your case, probably much more closely than in mine. Interestingly, it does not seem to bother you people to believe that you were created out of magic mud. And it is that fact that pretty much blows the lid off your pretensions of being logical and scientific. That belief proves that you are neither. Arthur wrote, "Secondly, far from being a matter of settled fact, a naturalistic means of generating life from non-life has not been explained." Wrong, Arthur. It has never been proven how life began. However, the Miller-Urey experiment did, in fact, provide a naturalistic means of generating organics from non-organics. He wrote, "In fact, there is mass confusion and heated debate among origin of life researchers." Arthur, that debate does not include your magic ghost. He wrote, "If we already had a firm grasp on how life originated on Earth, these origin of life researchers would not be trying to still find the answer. And if it's easy to reproduce such experiments, one simple experiment would be enough to show this to be the case. But we don't have that." Arthur, ask and ye shall receive. And in the Word document associated with this podcast, I provided him a link to the Miller-Urey experiment. It has been replicated repeatedly worldwide and is so easy to perform that even a high school student can do it. He wrote, "All we have is various speculations, all of which run into fairly big roadblocks along the way." Arthur, but in your mind, a magic invisible ghost? No roadblock at all. Think about your hypocrisy on that one for a while. He continues, "The claim of naturalistic evolutionists is that during the past 3.8 billion years, non-life has evolved into a conscious, self-reflective, artistic, spiritual, intelligent being that has the ability to examine the depths of the processes which have led to its existence. Even on the surface, this seems like a wild stretch." Arthur, someone with your beliefs is not in a position to be ridiculing others for a wild stretch. He wrote, "On paper, it looks even more daunting. Consider the fact that these 16 steps would have had to have been scaled during this time for that to have happened." Arthur, I'm going to skip your list as it does nothing more than list the accomplishments of evolution. He wrote, "What are the odds of all these steps being conquered by blind evolutionary processes?" Arthur, evolutionary processes are not blind. They are guided by the laws of nature and by natural selection. He continues, "Well, evolutionary biologist Francisco Ayala estimated these odds to be 1 in 10 to the 1 millionth power." Arthur, since the premise blind processes is false, Ayala's number is rendered meaningless. Arthur wrote, "This vast improbability has led philosophers to surmise that if evolution did occur, it would have been a miracle." Arthur, but you do believe in miracles, don't you? Do you really think it is a smart tactic to ridicule something that you yourself believe in? Hint, I would go with no on that one. Now he writes, "Stanley Miller's experiments of generating life from chemical compounds in the 1950s have in the modern age of scientific advancement been thoroughly refuted." Arthur, if that were true, you could feel something that only women can experience, multiple orgasms. But since it isn't true, your only hope of ever knowing that feeling would involve sexual reassignment surgery. And I just happen to know a guy. He continues, "Today scientists believe early Earth's atmosphere was composed of carbon dioxide, nitrogen, and water, and this mixture of gases does not yield organic compounds in prebiotic simulation experiments, hence no primordial soup, a devastating blow for the naturalistic origin of life scenario." Arthur, it's kind of funny, but also sad at the same time. that you willingly accept scientific speculations like the one you just cited when you think you can use them to support your position. All the audience has to do is go back a short way to see what you thought of scientific speculation. Yet here you are trumpeting a devastating blow and fully accepting a scientific speculation. The bottom line is that no one knows what atmospheric conditions were like on the early Earth. Arthur continues, additionally, and this is something that should be even more unsettling for Origin of Life researchers, there are actually no chemical signatures of any primordial soup in the oldest rock formations on Earth. Arthur, and what would those signatures look like? You don't know because the apologetic sites where you got these cut-and-paste gotchas didn't tell you. By the way, Arthur, run back to those apologetic sites and ask them why they are looking for signatures in the oldest rocks, which are about 4.3 billion years old, when life isn't believed to have evolved from the elements until hundreds of millions of years later. Let me know what they say. He wrote, "The prebiotic soup is a scientific myth." Arthur, actually, it is one hypothesis for how life on Earth may have started. Myths would be those stories found in your ancient holy book. You know, like the talking snake and the argumentative donkey, which you have no problem believing. He said, emanating from a presupposition of what must have happened given the claims of naturalistic chemical evolution. Arthur, the Miller-Urey experiment was not a presupposition. They had no way of knowing what would happen when they tried it. They were the first to discover the link between non-life and life. He wrote, yet another form of begging the question, whereby the assumption of that which is desired to be achieved is presupposed at the outset, presupposing the theory that we're trying to prove. Arthur, you are describing ghost worship, not science. You are engaging in psychological projection. He continues, lastly, the fact that abiogenesis has not been explained by evolution has little to do with the merits of ID, as ID does not depend on the failure of the naturalistic evolutionary model to explain abiogenesis, but offers something better, a competing corresponding model. No, Arthur, it does not offer a model. It offers ancient myths. Nor do your fairy tales compete with modern science. Nearly all scientists, many of whom are Christians, laugh at you people. You are considered a joke outside the bubble of fools within which you operate. And Arthur, that applies worldwide. Now Arthur moves to number two. ID explains abiogenesis as an unnamed designer, supernatural or alien. To which Arthur replies, ID makes no claims about the designer. The central proposition of ID is that certain effects are the result of intelligent causes. That's all. That's it. Arthur, that just shows how utterly dishonest you little freaks are. Everyone already knows who you think the designer is. He wrote, obviously that opens the door of implications for what could potentially be the cause of those effects. But ID really has nothing to do with what follows. As a theist, I would obviously see this requirement consistent with a transcendent cause, namely God. But that has little to do with ID, as we are now in the realm of philosophy. Arthur, I don't think you should diminish philosophy by equating it to religion. Now Arthur moves to number three. ID does not accept evolution, but adaptation. What's the difference? To which Arthur replies, the difference between adaptation and what the writer most likely intended to say by evolution, macroevolution, is quite big. Based on a brief summary of this objection that the writer alludes to, it's clear that the writer had a good idea what the answer to the question might be, that it is this difference between microevolution and macroevolution. Arthur, macroevolution is a term that was invented for the sole purpose of denying evolution. There is only evolution. He continues, in the expansion of this question, the writer speculates what the answer might be to his original question and asks, What genetic mechanism stops microevolution to continue evolving into macroevolution? Now Arthur replies, well, let's see. Adaptation is a change within a specified limited range of genetic variability. Macroevolution is an all-out, no-holds-barred changes from radically different animal kinds to others. Wrong, Arthur. Animals do not radically change from their parents. Crocodiles do not produce crocoducks. That only happens in Ray Comfort's fantasy world. He wrote, macroevolution sees no true genetic limitations. Arthur, evolution does have genetic limitations. Remember the crocoduck? He wrote, smaller microevolutionary changes are extrapolated as a means to demonstrate that larger, more extensive changes have happened. However, this extrapolation is founded on the speculation that natural selection and mutation are all that we need to move evolution along. Arthur, those are not the only two evolutionary processes. Genetic drift and horizontal gene transfer are just two of several others. Arthur, less time in Bible study and more time hitting the biology textbooks could have saved you a ton of embarrassment. He wrote that great amounts of new complex specified information can be regenerated by completely random means. Arthur, natural selection is not completely random, nor is genetic drift. The problem seems to be, Arthur, that you do not even possess the basic biological knowledge of a high school freshman. He now moves to number 4. ID is guided evolution or adaptation. The atheist writer had asked, where's the guide? Is there a goal to evolution? Are we the goal? Surprise. To which Arthur replies, it's not clear what kind of guide the writer is asking for, but it's safe to assume he is asking for the author of the process of guiding evolution. In other words, he wants scientific evidence for the intelligent agent that is guiding the process. Well, that is actually not a relevant question to whether or not ID is a reliable explanation of what occurs in nature. Arthur, when people try to dismiss relevant questions like you just did, it is usually because they have no answer or because they are hiding something. They have an answer, but they don't want to give it. Why? Why hide it? The answer is because Christian apologists cannot defend their position. Their entire shtick is to try to stay on the offensive and keep scientists on the defensive. William Lane Craig is a perfect example of someone who uses that tactic. Sadly, it often succeeds because opponents fall for it. Unfortunately for you, Arthur, I didn't. We'll skip number 5 because it's boring. Number 6. Design is everywhere. Look around you. Arthur writes, in this section, the atheist writer makes a sweeping statement. The natural world is all around us, also known as reality. So far, we have zero evidence for the supernatural, designer or not, or for aliens. If you have no evidence, why hold on to a silly belief? Now Arthur replies. The first point to be made here is that the writer has already settled the case in his mind by presupposing the visual natural world, all around us, to be the total sum of reality. Arthur, what makes you think he is presupposing? Perhaps he is basing his conclusion on the fact that since no evidence for the supernatural has ever been found, it has a lot in common with things that don't exist. Now he writes, the mere visual world is not all there is. Arthur, you need to reread his statement. He didn't say that. So you have created yet another straw man. And now I will skip over Arthur's lengthy and tedious destruction of his own straw man. Arthur continues. The writer then moves on to state that we have zero evidence for the supernatural. To which Arthur responds, this is demonstrably false. There have been scores of books written on history, science, philosophy, and more that demonstrate this evidence. Arthur, books are not evidence. Have you ever heard of science fiction? Harry Potter? Star Wars? Arthur, let me give you another hint. They're not true. He wrote, "The problem here may be that the author is expecting evidence of a certain kind that would persuade him. However, an intelligent agent has no obligations to demonstrate such visual proof to every generation of human beings from eternity past into the indefinite future." Arthur, we aren't asking for proof to be given to every generation. We would be thrilled if your ghost could be talked into providing proof to just one generation. Next, I will skip over number 7, as it is also very boring, and continue with numbers 8 and 9. Irreducible complexity is the key. Irreducible complexity has been debunked. Now we believe in inconceivable complexity. To which Arthur responds, "Well, irreducible complexity plays a role, but it is not necessarily the key. Irreducible complexity is a view of ID that certain aspects of the natural world are so intricately intertwined in their symbiotic design that its parts would not have emerged independently as part of the overall system without any guiding intelligence at work." Now Arthur quotes the atheist writer, "The bacterial flagellum is actually an evolved trait. All components that make up the bacterial flagellum can be found functioning in other organisms. The flagellum most likely evolved with more parts, each additional part beneficial for its host, and later evolved to a less complex form." To which Arthur replies, "The flagellum is actually a simple example proposed by Michael Behe." Arthur, Behe's simple example got him sliced and diced in court. If you watch the documentary about that trial, you can see Behe get his ass handed to him in a jar. But Arthur, for apologists like you, if you do decide to watch it, make sure you keep a barf bag next to your remote. Arthur states, "Irreducible complexity has actually not been disproved." Arthur, I've noticed that you like to use the logic lingo and try to impress your audience. I've also noticed that you demonstrate repeatedly that you haven't the faintest idea how logic works. Your last claim was a perfect example. Even a beginning logic student would have known better than to make the rookie error of trying to switch the burden of proof. It is not the scientist's burden to disprove Behe's theories. It is Behe's burden to prove it. Arthur, 15 minutes on a Wikipedia logic page isn't going to cut it. If you want to run with the big dogs and quote logical fallacies, first you had better learn how to recognize them. And most importantly, how to avoid committing them. He continues, Behe has actually adequately defended his position. Arthur, not in court he didn't. Seriously, Arthur, you need to rent that documentary. But if you have kids, make sure you send them to bed first. You wouldn't want them to see their dad puking his guts out. Arthur wrote, Behe aside, the atheist writer stated, abiogenesis and evolution can account for all irreducibly complex arguments. To which Arthur replied, well, it's clear that life came into being from non-life. Arthur, rational people believe life came into being after evolving from inorganic elements, while you believe it was created by an invisible ghost with severe anger management issues, who said, abracadabra, alakazam, from magic mud, I will make me a man. Arthur continues, the question is whether there was an intelligence guiding the process or not. Arthur, based on the location of our windpipe and esophagus, I would be wary of granting God intelligence on that one. A non-union plumber could have done a better job. Arthur continues, it's true that just because one person cannot conceive of a particular reality, that we cannot necessarily negate that it's true. However, this can also be easily applied to the writer's own incredulity about intelligent design and God. Just because the atheist writer cannot conceive of such truths does not necessarily merit his disbelief. Arthur, you have just committed the logical fallacy of false equivalency. His incredulity is not the same as your incredulity. His incredulity is based on science and logic. Your incredulity is based on motivated reasoning, though I hate to dignify what you do as reasoning. Now Arthur moves to number 10. DNA is a genetic code, therefore it's designed. The atheist writer apparently wrote, "Idealists claim that human DNA is over 90% functional. Geneticists believe human DNA to be about 8% functional." Now Arthur responds, "The claim that geneticists believe human DNA to be about 8% functional is a highly outdated position. Throughout most of history of such research, it was widely claimed that most of human DNA was junk. Not anymore. The pattern has always been towards more complex specified information being utilized in ways that we previously never fathomed. The more we learn, the more we recognize function of what we previously thought to be junk, and get a greater sense of just how breathtakingly complex biological systems are. All are results that evolutionists did not expect. The recent ENCODE project, for example, demonstrated that this formerly supposed junk DNA is a myth. We now know with a high degree of certitude that the vast majority, at least 80%, of our DNA information is in use in one way or another." Arthur, allow me to show your audience what you are hiding from them. And in the Word document, I provided him a link to an article from sciencenews.org. Here's an excerpt. "Not only is most of the genome junk, it seems so is the ENCODE analysis. It uses a questionable definition of function and commits various logical fallacies in applying it." End quote. Arthur, thanks for proving for the umpteenth time that honesty and ghost worshippers go together like the Hatfields and the McCoys. Number 11. Humans share 99.5% genetic information with other humans because we're closely related. Humans share less genetic information with trees because we're less closely related. Arthur replies, "The similarity here does not contribute anything to the claims of common descent." Arthur, now you're just retreating into denial. The claims of common descent are based on that similarity, which is what enabled biologists to construct the evolutionary tree of life. Arthur, this is nothing more than biology 101. If you are going to play in the big leagues, you need to at least understand the basics of what your opponent's position is. He continues, "It's clear that we share less genetic information with other forms of life. Is common descent the only viable way to explain this? Not really. We can also explain the facts by common design. It's an equally good explanation, perhaps even more so, to say that human beings are designed and trees are designed." Arthur, then you have boxed yourself into a corner from which you cannot escape as you desperately try to explain all the horrible designs in nature, such as the giraffe's laryngeal nerve. Only a maniacal idiot would design a world such as this one. He continues, "The writer then speaks about phylogenetic trees providing evidence of common ancestry because of the reduction, expansion of these genetic similarities. What the writer is unaware of is that the method of concocting and utilizing phylogenetic trees in identifying ancestral relationships is valid only if evolution and common ancestry is assumed a priori." Arthur, you are using a straw man to falsely accuse biologists of circular reasoning. Evolution and common ancestry were never assumed a priori. For thousands of years, everyone, including nearly every scientist, assumed creation. But evidence gathered in recent centuries indicated that evolution and common ancestry were the only explanations that explained the observations. He wrote, "Now, suppose we are charitable and grant the construction of phylogenetic trees their merit in identifying evolutionary lineages. If evolutionary lineages are so clear-cut, would we not expect the trees arrived at by various evolutionary researchers to be identical to those constructed by others?" Arthur, you don't even realize that you just made the same mistake as your opponent did earlier. Remember when you nailed him correctly for trying to claim that if humans had 90% functional DNA, then other mammals should too? Now you commit the same generalization fallacy that he did. Since when do all scientists agree on every detail of any theory? The errors you can find so easily in others, Arthur, elude you when you commit them. He wrote, would they at least be similar? The fact of the matter is that the proposed phylogenies of one group of researchers vary greatly from those proposed by others. There is no consensus that the writer is implicitly claiming. Arthur, the phylogenies do not vary greatly as you claim. They vary only in detail. Where all the phylogenies do vary greatly is in comparison to your tree of life, which looks nothing like the world we see around us. Arthur wrote, I would like to conclude by pointing out the writer has in multiple instances committed what he was suspecting might be the case. Not merely the logical fallacy that he mentioned at the outset, the straw man, but also many others. His understanding of ID is woefully misinformed. Arthur, not to worry. Being woefully misinformed about bullshit like astrology, homeopathy, or ancient gruesome fairy tales will not negatively impact him as long as he has the rational thinking skills to protect himself from the dangers they represent. He wrote, the arguments for macroevolution highly outdated, overstated, and many fallacious. Arthur, since macroevolution is a creationist invention anyway, who cares? As long as he understands evolution, then he is firmly grounded in reality, something you will likely never experience. Arthur continues, as far as style goes, suffice it to say that his manner of persuasion is much to be desired. Arthur, based on how fast your Christian friend fled the flock, it sounds like you weren't much better. He wrote, angry rants laced with profanity have little impact on the learned. Arthur, you live in the 21st century and still worship an angry invisible ghost. So he wasn't ranting to the learned. Arthur wrote, and frankly have no place in reasonable discussions between serious grown-ups. Again, Arthur, your beliefs have eliminated you from the category of serious grown-ups, nor has anything that you have said qualified as part of a reasonable discussion. You are granting yourself a status that your own words have not earned. He continues, I suppose there may be many who fall victim to such intellectual bullying by buying what merely sounds intelligent. Arthur, is that your excuse for why your friend bailed on God? Well, she isn't alone. Christianity is at a historic low in America, 70%, and is disappearing even faster in Europe as humans evolve out of ghost worship and into a more enlightened age. He wrote, when people use big words with confidence, especially big scientific words, they try to prop themselves high on a pedestal to preach to the masses about their ignorance and backwardness. Arthur, and then there are those like you who try to impress everyone with the 15 minutes you spent on a Wikipedia logic page, only to trip yourself up constantly with logical fallacies. And Arthur concludes by writing, and the intelligent designer waits patiently with open arms, ready to embrace those who would humble themselves under the truth. Arthur, tell us what the intelligent designer has promised to do to those who don't. And now we move to the science segment. Today, alcohol use disorder affects about 30% of Americans in their lifetime. Alcohol use disorder has become a highly prevalent, highly comorbid, disabling disorder that often goes untreated in the United States, concludes an analysis of over 36,000 face-to-face interviews. Prevalence overall was high, but even more so for men. 36% at some point in their life had alcohol use disorder. The existence of a problem was established in the study if criteria were met for the latest definition of alcohol use disorder as set out in the 5th edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. The main change in the diagnosis of alcohol use disorder was to merge the criteria for abuse and dependence, which had been considered separately before. Abuse criteria involved the social problems of drinking too much, while the dependence criteria involved classic measures of addiction, such as withdrawal and time spent consuming alcohol. The main finding of the study was that among Americans, there is a lifetime alcohol use disorder prevalence of 29.1%, but only 19.8% of adults are ever treated. So 68.5 million Americans have alcohol use disorder at some point in their lives. Rates were also particularly high among Native Americans, 43.4% in their lifetimes. And alcohol use disorders were associated with other disorders, such as substance abuse, major depressive and bipolar 1, and antisocial and borderline personality disorders. And now we move to the final segment of the show, Famous Quotes. Today we have an anonymous quote. Science is in the business of finding facts. Politics is in the business of hiding them. Religion is in the business of making them up.
Are you ready, Goose?